get out of town and make a name for himself. Just as she'd done, he was attempting to tame his hair. Theo watched him twist half of it into a bun, her gaze lingering on what she could see of the tattoo on his neck. Tendrils crept from beneath the neckline of his shirt, their shapes soft and organic, nothing like the geometric Union flag that had been on Pitch Evans's neck. Don't trust the kid. It was Lisbeth Tarlow they never should have trusted, and Dylan Lowe. Had they listened to Cohen Rively, fled to Odyssey at his very first warning, they'd all have been better off. Thea closed the door to the washroom, and Cohen's attention snapped to her. His eyes moved over her clothing.
Who'd have guessed you were so scrawny under that suit?
Bony elbows can hurt, you know.
A smile touched his lips.
Only if you can land one on me.
She knew she couldn't.
What now?
She asked, feeling weary and wired at once.
Now we wait.
Thea slid into the pilot chair, knees bouncing as she scanned the dashboard controls. A light indicating that their emergency beacon was transmitting lit up, staying on for precisely 6 seconds as the message broadcast, then falling dark until the next transmission. Thea caught herself anticipating the pattern, glancing back to the light just a heartbeat before it would illuminate. The rhythm became a reassurance. Time was passing, even if nothing beyond the windshield appeared to change. Exodus was designed for travel within a single system, as all short-range shuttles were. Quick flights between planets and moons, getting passengers to their destination in a few hours, or perhaps a day, by leveraging a powerful accelerator drive. This was the only type of travel legally allowed within the confines of a star system, and Thea could wish for an FTL drive all she wanted. It wouldn't change the fact that Exodus didn't have one. At their current speed, it would be years, decades, before the Exodus approached Sotir, its passengers dead, inside. If they didn't encounter the backup Hevet's rescue crew soon, they were doomed. The emergency beacon flashed again. The expanse beyond the window appeared unchanged. It was 3 more hours before the ship's fuel reserves dropped very near the amount needed to safely return to Achilles.
Should we wake her?
Thea said, glancing toward the cryopod.
So she could take us back?
Cohen asked.
Is that really what you want to do?
No.
Me either.
But it didn't feel right to push past this point without giving Nova a choice. Cohen sensed Thea's hesitation.
Even if we wake her and she votes in favor of returning, we outnumber her,
he said.
Majority rules.
Thea nodded, turning back to the cockpit. For 20 minutes, with the beacon flashing in her peripherals, she watched the fuel reserves. When they crossed that point of no return, she felt dread, but also freedom. It was out of her hands now. They would be rescued, or they would die.
If I could do it again, I'd have told you sooner,
Cohen said, leaning a hip into the dashboard. Thea kept her eyes on the flashing beacon.
Exactly what had happened,
he went on.
And how it was in me, too.
Why did you wait? She snapped, turning to face him. You knew you were infected after speaking telepathically with Dr. Tarlow, but when we drove to Odyssey, you still kept it from me. You fed me certain truths, but you hid the most important ones. He thumbed his lip a moment. It had been so long since she'd seen him without a suit and helmet that she felt like she was looking at him for the first time. She noticed how tall he was, standing beside her, how his throat bobbed when he swallowed.
I didn't know if I could trust you,
he said finally.
I thought maybe you were loyal to Hevet's, or that you'd side with Tarlow no matter what I said. That's why I showed you the Witch Hazel footage first, tried to feel out your reaction to that. By the time I came clean, it was because I had to. I can see how I screwed that up now, but this is why I'm saying I'd have been upfront from the beginning if I could do it again. I'd have told you everything I knew, as I came to know it.
His gaze came up to meet hers. Everything about his expression was soft and vulnerable, his brown eyes calm and patient, his brows stitched with sincerity. He meant these words. Whether they were an honest apology or just something he needed to get off his chest, Thea couldn't say. Perhaps they were both. She nodded to acknowledge them.
"Do you really think you can cure it?"
he asked. It was quiet for a moment, the only noise between them the thrum of the ship's reactor. Thea glanced at the duffel that held the research, then back at Cohen, his eyes bright with hope.
"Every problem can be solved," she said. "It's just a matter of having enough time."
"Exodus, come in,"
the intercom crackled.
"This is the UBS Paramount. Exodus, do you copy?"
Thea tensed in the pilot's seat. Cohen perked up beside her.
"A Union battleship?"
he said.
"Where the hell's the Hewitt's backup crew?"
"Who cares?" Thea exclaimed. "We're saved!" She reached to engage the intercom, but Cohen lurched forward, his hand covering hers. It was the first bit of human touch she'd experienced since suiting up on Odyssey over 12 hours ago. It sent a jolt of heat through her, and she pulled her hand back.
"Our story,"
Cohen said, keeping his hand in front of the comm gear.
"What are we going to tell them?"
His desperation was obvious to Thea, and thick in a way she had not yet witnessed. Even fighting off hordes of the infected, he hadn't appeared this vulnerable. Ockley's had become his home, in a way. There, he was a king. But this was a strange new territory, and she knew he could see how many ways things could go wrong.
"We'll say there was a deadly outbreak," she told him. "You're the lone survivor. I found you at the Witch Hazel bunker, and we reunited with my crew. End of story."
"And Nova?"
"She'll say the same thing when questioned, because it's all she knows."
"And you won't mention my abilities?"
Cohen said, his brows arching.
"Or how I'm carrying it?"
Thea turned sharply toward him. His face gleamed with the lights of the dash, worry etched there.
"Cohen, they'll have us in quarantine for weeks, regardless of what I say. I don't have any reason to make them more suspicious. I just want to go home."
He nodded, his understanding deep.
"Exodus," the intercom crackled. "This is Lieutenant Christoph Burke of the UBS Paramount. Do you copy?"
Cohen nodded, and Thea leapt to action.
"Exodus here," she said.
"With whom am I speaking?"
"This is Althea Sadek. I'm an intern with Hewitt's Industries. Our environmental survey crew at Sotir's Northwood Point got called to investigate..."
"A distress call from the Black Quarry crew. We all know about it. The Union military is working with Hewitt's on this rescue mission."
Beside Thea, Cohen bristled.
"We've got a team of Hewitt scientists on board," Burke continued, "and we picked up Black Quarry's Declan Powell during his transit back to Sotir. What's your status?"
"Myself, one Black Quarry survivor, and Odyssey's original pilot. The other 5 of my crew are deceased."
The lieutenant swore.
"What the hell happened? You were supposed to sit tight on Odyssey, wait for us to arrive. We sent instructions while you were in stasis."
"If our captain got them, she didn't tell us."
Thea glanced at the airlock, fuming. Dylan might not have seen that SOS, but she'd been informed of a risk on Ockley's soil, and she'd gambled with her entire crew's lives anyway. All to go after her father, who'd been beyond saving from the beginning.
"I'd ask her what the hell she was thinking," Thea added. "But she's dead."
Another swear.
"How?"
"There was a deadly outbreak. We think the contagion originated in the water. It spread through Black Quarry's entire crew, and ours fell prey to it also, including our captain."
"What about the lone survivor?"
"He was holed up in the old Witch Hazel bunker. I found him when I was separated from my crew during a storm. He's not exhibiting any symptoms of the infection, But I can't urge you enough to put that rock under galactic quarantine. No one should set foot there again.
We'll make the decisions, Ms. Sadek. Where's your pilot?
She's in stasis. Let me wake her.
No need for that. I just wanted to ensure she was safe. Let her rest, and once you're in range, we'll pull you in remotely. We'll see you in less than an hour.
Thank you, sir.
One last thing. Does that Black Quarry survivor have a name? Amos Lashley, sir,
Cohen said, leaning forward.
General Driller in the Labor Division. Do you need my Hevitz ID? That won't be necessary. Our condolences for all you've been through, Mr. Lashley. This will be behind you shortly. Over and out.
The UBS Paramount overrode Exodus's steering approximately 20 minutes later and began to draw them in. The Paramount's credentials filled a screen on the dashboard, and Thea read them hurriedly. It was a Union battleship serving the TRIO system with a home port on Sotir. It was too good to be true. Not only were they saved, but they'd be returning to the Trios, escorted by officers and soldiers. Her nightmares were over. When Thea heard the sound of the shuttle docking with the battleship, a surge of relief blew through her. She felt instantly lighter. The external airlock door parted, and bodies marched into the bay. Thea could see the military seal on their uniforms through the small interior airlock window. They were tense and rigid as they stood at attention, helmets obscuring all but a fearful slope to their brows. That fear was reassuring, though. If the crew was worried by what awaited them on the Exodus, it meant they weren't foolish enough to investigate Ocles, to go digging for what should be left forgotten. Thea glanced at Cohen, smiling, but his forehead had wrinkled and his mouth had gone thin with suspicion. Her cheerfulness vanished. She sensed it too, suddenly, how the air seemed laced with electricity. She heard the interior airlock door crack open and turned in time to see a canister come rolling into the shuttle. Thea leapt back, dodging the first and even the second, but soon there were dozens of cans being lobbed into the small space, knocking against her feet. Gas billowed. She coughed, sputtered. Even Cohen wasn't immune, and he joined her in hacking. A figure strode into view, the name Burke stitched in the breastplate of his spacesuit. Thea's mind felt foggy, her limbs detached. She could barely stay on her feet as the lieutenant strode toward the cryostasis pod and kicked the power switch. The light illuminating Nova flickered and went dark.
No!
Thea tried to shout. The pilot could die without being properly revived, but the gas was everywhere, and Thea's mouth had stopped working. She turned, searching for Cohen. He was already on the ground, eyes falling shut. Her knees buckled. Darkness overtook her. Nova was dreaming, again chasing a beacon that led to a space station. It wasn't breached this time, but she still found Dylan inside. The woman was trapped in an airlock, pounding on the window, begging to be let in. When Nova opened the door, Dylan would vanish, and the banging would originate in another part of the station, the dream repeating. On and on it went, and still Nova kept up her search. She was making her way to another airlock when the station's lights flickered. That hadn't happened yet, not in all the times the dream had recurred. She paused, hand on the wall, and the hallways plummeted into darkness. The space station shuddered, and Nova was suddenly weightless, floating in the corridor. She heard voices, distant and leery. Then the crank of a handle, like a hatch being opened. The air suddenly left her lungs, and she was sucked through the station at an unnatural speed, flying toward the airlock. Somehow the doors had opened, both internal and external, and she could make out the freezing, silent expanse beyond. Nova hurtled toward it, spinning end over end, gasping. A hand closed over her wrist, yanking her to a halt. Heat flared through her shoulder. She glanced up to see Dylan.
"Hang on," the captain whispered. "Stay with me."
The woman pulled Nova to safety, propelling them both through halls and corridors, defying the vacuum of space.
It was impossible, and yet here they were, crossing a threshold into a new section of the station.
Dylan sealed the door behind them, and the insane pressure stopped. Nova floated, weightless. She could breathe again.
"This area's secure," Dylan said. "For now, but that breach at the airlock is bad, and there's another in engineering."
"How do we fix them?"
"I don't know. The whole station's failing. We have to keep it operational."
"For how long?"
Nova asked.
"Until you wake up."
Nova heard the voices again, tinny and bright, coming from beyond the station.
But that didn't make sense. No one could be outside, not unless it was her crew, performing repairs.
A beam of light drifted through a window like a spotlight, but when Nova floated over for a better look, she couldn't see anything but stars.
"What is this place?"
she asked.
"Where the heck are we?"
"Between."
"Between where?"
Dylan looked at her sadly, blinked those icy blue eyes.
"You're in a coma, Nova. But I'll stay with you as long as you want."
Thea came to in an isolation chamber. She flinched, only to find her ankles and wrists restrained by cuffs. Leather straps extended across her shins, thighs, waist, and chest, all tightly cinched. She'd been restrained like a subject on an operating table, only this table had been angled so that she was nearly in an upright position, feet dangling just above the floor. Something moved before her, and her eyes zeroed in on Lieutenant Burke. He still wore a spacesuit, but she remained in her t-shirt and leggings. Even with such little clothing, she felt heavy, leaden. The room was sedated, she realized, not as thoroughly as the Exodus, which had made her pass out, but enough to keep her sluggish. Thea craned against the restraints, looking at the med bay beyond her chamber. The equipment was similar to Celestial Envoys, but the far wall bore the Union's military crest, a geometric shield sporting equally geometric eagle wings. Three stars sat above the shield like a halo.
"Where am I?"
she said, already knowing the answer.
"The UBS Paramount," Lieutenant Burke confirmed. "You're safe now."
She yanked her limbs against the restraints.
"This is safe?"
"There was a slight complication with your story. We had to take precautions."
"Where's our pilot? And Amos?
"Ah,"
Burke said with a small smile.
"That's where the problem begins, doesn't it? With Cohen Rivley."
He knew Cohen's true identity. Dread billowed through her.
"A quick search of Union records shows that Amos Lashley is presumed dead,"
the lieutenant said.
"We ran a facial recognition program after docking the Exodus, which revealed that your Amos Lashley is actually Cohen Rivley, a 17-year-old high school dropout, guilty of 3 felonies, the least serious of which is identity theft."
Burke leaned forward, peering down at her.
"Althea Sadik, on the other hand, a promising student with exceptional grades, top of her class, winner of a prestigious Hevitz internship with a fair shot at Linnaeus Institute in her future. In other words, smart. Smart enough to not go down with a teenage felon."
He rubbed the pad of his thumb against his palm for a second, then glanced up at her.
"Care to change your story?"
"He's infected."
"There," she'd said it. Chances were they already knew, and if they didn't, they'd find out soon enough. Cohen was likely in isolation just like her, and all it would take was one body scan, one blood test. She felt terrible saying those two words, an ungrateful, backstabbing traitor, but they'd find something foreign in his results. Thea needed to warn them before it was too late, before they unleashed the contagion a second time.
"So you see why we can't let you go,"
Lieutenant Burke said.
"Standard quarantine,"
She nodded.
How long until I'm out of this chamber?
You misunderstand me. You're not coming out of the chamber. Not any time soon.
An unsettling grin spread over his lips. But I'm clean. I'm not infected.
Black Quarry was an important research operation, and Celestial Envoy was not a military ship. It was protecting company secrets, not data pertaining to Union security. Activating the emergency destruct sequence simultaneously initiated a program that backed up all important ship data for Hevitz, from surveillance footage and audio files to documented reports.
He took a step toward her.
Black Quarry used much of the infrastructure of the project before them as a foundation for their technical needs. Because of this, footage from the Witch Hazel bunker was also salvaged. We reviewed what we could while closing in on the Exodus.
Thea's heart dropped. She truly felt it drop, as though she were experiencing a moment of weightless freefall.
After the storm, Burke continued, Cohen Rivley revived you with mouth-to-mouth resuscitation inside the bunker's airlock.
It's passed by blood, she said quickly.
Many diseases passed by blood are passed by any bodily fluid.
There's no proof that's true here.
But I think there is,
Burke continued.
Think, Thea.
He waved at the air, tapped on the side of his helmet.
Think.
The chamber being pumped with a sedative. The lieutenant, fully suited, and her still breathing without a mask or buffer. Her pulse kicked as the pieces slid together. She'd passed out from the gas on the Exodus, too, but at roughly the same time as Cohen. Earlier, Nova had been exhausted, desperate for a reprieve, and yet Thea hadn't been able to sleep. Just like Cohen. When had the symptoms begun? She went back, searching her memories. She'd climbed the dumbwaiter shaft despite her body being racked with exhaustion. She'd pried open the hydraulic door that serviced Commander Lowe's room. Her endurance and strength had been a surprise. She'd chalked it up to adrenaline. But maybe it was from something more. It couldn't be true. Thea didn't feel any different. Was it the sedative being filtered into the chamber, obscuring her senses, then? Cohen said it had taken a couple of hours for signs to appear after he'd been infected, but that they'd happened subtly, taking about half a day to fully manifest. When the Paramount had pulled the Exodus in, it had been roughly 10 hours since Cohen revived Thea. Lieutenant Burke took another step toward her, and the material of his spacesuit brushed against Thea's bare feet. The sensation of touch shot through her. Every muscle in her body tensed, wanting to lash out, attack, flee. Burke leaned in, lowering his eyes to her level. And that's when she heard it. The muted thump of his heart, his pulse in her head. Once she'd recognized it, she couldn't unhear it. And then there was more. The flap of valves opening and closing, lungs pulsing. Oxygen moving, the ticking human machine. A drop of sweat fell from the lieutenant's brow, hitting the inside of his helmet with an audible pfft. Without the sedative, would she have heard all of this when he sat a meter away? Would she have known immediately that she'd become this thing? I'm not infected, she insisted.
You are.
Then get rid of us, she begged. Put us to sleep. Throw us into space.
Is that what you'd have recommended we do to your friend?
Burke's expression contorted with amusement. Yes, you can't bring this to the Trios. You can't bring it to any colonized planet in the Union. I've seen what it can do if it gets out, how bad it can be when it meets an incompatible host.
I'd as soon launch 2 newly discovered alien species into space as I would extinguish you and Mr. Rivley. I watched a surveillance video where he fought off nearly 3 dozen infected in a Celestial Envoy hull, single-handedly. There's a good chance you can now do the same. If we can harness that power, If we know how to control it, the Trios will be unstoppable. We'll have the strongest military in the universe.
Thea caught the distinction. The Trios would have the strongest military, not the Union. One of Toby's theories flew through her mind.
The Trios has its own fleet of military vessels, just like the Cradle. If enough Trios ships defect, they could stage one hell of a revolution.
The UBS Paramount hailed from Sotir. It was governed by Union law, but it served the Trios first and foremost, the rest of the galaxy second. Its crew could be radicals.
"What if you can't harness it?" Thea snapped. "If one thing goes wrong, you'll have damned everyone on the ship, potentially an entire system."
"You let me worry about the details, Miss Sadik. I can see you're not a soldier. Cooperate, and when we've got what we need from you, I'll let you go home."
His pulse slowed with smug satisfaction, and Thea knew it was a lie. She was never going home. She sensed Burke's smile before it morphed into view behind his visor.
"You can't do this!" She flailed again against her restraints. "Where's Nova? What about that Hevitz pilot, Declan? Does the company know what you're doing?"
"Of course they know. I have a team of their scientists on board. When Aldrich Vastanur saw Black Quarry's SOS, he feared the worst and contacted a friend at Galactic Disease Control. That friend pulled me in. We assembled our teams and shipped out on the Paramount as quickly as possible. But this outcome? What your crew found? It's incredible."
"Incredible? Hundreds of people were dead. An inconceivable number could follow."
"I have rights," Thea went on, still rattling the restraints. "You can't keep me here. You can't withhold a minor without their parents' or guardian's permission."
"You're an orphan. Your parents are dead. There is no one in the entire Union who will believe your story, and no one who will come looking for you."
The truth behind his words hit hard enough to make Thea gasp. There was no lie they couldn't spread convincingly. Black Quarry had been top secret, and no one would be searching for a crew they didn't know was even stationed on Achilles to begin with. Family of the crew members would get a variety of vague letters, apologizing for an accident that had regrettably stolen a life. And Northwood Point had been evacuated due to a storm. It would be easy to say Odyssey never made it off the ice caps, that its crew perished in the blizzard. Thea pictured the warden at the foster home shrugging at the news of her death and passing the letter on to Child Services. No one would miss her. Cohen and Toby had shared a fear that the company was corrupt, that Hevitz had endangered all its employees for a large stash of corarium. But Thea could see now how the truth was even bigger, more complex. It wasn't the company she needed to fear, but men like Lieutenant Burke, radicals who would stop at nothing for Trios independence, including putting the lives of an entire system at risk in the pursuit of their own goals. They would be the Trios' undoing.
"At least let me study the research," Thea said, desperate. "It's safe to have me working on it, and you need a cure, an ability to fight the bacteria if it infects someone incapable of hosting it. You don't know what you're tampering with."
"We already have people going through the files salvaged from Celestial Envoy, and your duffel bag of blood work and brain scans is proving incredibly illuminating."
The dread coursed through Thea, and the lieutenant merely smiled.
"Let me go!"
Thea screamed, pulling at her restraints, blood boiling.
"You have to let me go!"
She arched against the table as quickly as she could manage and heard a satisfying snap of the restraint across her chest. Lieutenant Burke staggered away, shocked.
"More sedative!" he called to someone.
But Thea's blood was already electric, every millimeter of her charged. She yanked her hands away from the table, snapping open the cuffs. There was a prick of pain, followed by a wetness that blossomed, and then it was gone. One glance at her wrists, and she could see the bleeding had already stopped, any cuts already healed. Burke ran for the exit, his pulse beating a frenzy of noise into Thea's skull. She reached for the remaining buckles, unfastening them as quickly as she could. Her own pulse kicked wildly in response. Burke was going to get away. Her window for escape was shrinking. She yanked both her legs against the ankle restraints with all the force she could muster. The cuffs burst free, but not before slicing into her. Again, she felt the whisper of the injury, a feather on her skin, before it subsided. Thea stumbled from the table, staggered after Burke. The air was getting thick, her limbs heavy. Several paces from him, she slumped to her knees. Darkness danced at the corners of her vision as she watched Lieutenant Burke slip through the doorway. He turned back to face her, relief painted on his features, as he stared down on her through the glass that divided them. His pulse slowed in Thea's ears, growing cloudy and muffled. Just before passing out, she had a sickening realization. She would have attacked, with more time. And if she'd been injured in the scuffle, if any of her blood managed to find its way into a cut she'd inflicted on Burke, Thea had almost unleashed the horror of Black Quarry on the UBS Paramount. When she awoke next, it was in a dark room. Before, it might have looked black to her. There were no lights or windows, but she could see to the room's edges, its darkness now nothing but a dim annoyance. A cot pushed into a corner, unadorned walls, a water dish set on the ground before a small window near the base of the door. The opening was large enough for a cat or small dog, but certainly not Thea. She threaded her hands through her hair. If someone stood guard outside the room, she could not hear their pulse. She paced the room for hours, straining, listening. Eventually, she sat on the bed. She felt bright, springy, almost weightless. Her thoughts were clear. Her breathing came easily. The room was not sedated, which made the silence that much more threatening. She was alone. Nova was, at worst, dead, and at best, in a coma. The pilot, Declan Powell, who should have been Black Quarry's salvation, had likely been paid for his silence, or had been silenced by execution. And Cohen. His situation could be no better than hers. She lay back on the cot. At first, she thought about Althea Sadek, and if that person was dead. She wondered who she was now. She wondered what she was now. Each question brought her close to tears, making her feel small and weak. So she began to think about things she could control. She had her head and hands. She didn't need Nova or Declan or even the boy monster, Cohen Rively. She'd be her own savior. She thought about the water dish and the service window in the door, and as the minutes ticked by, a tireless Thea Sadek began to plot her escape. He'd been poked, prodded, injected, inspected. They'd taken blood samples, skin samples, urine samples, probably a dozen other varieties of samples. Cohen had lost track. He'd been on this table since leaving the shuttle. They'd believed him to be unconscious, and though he could hear the distant hum of the gas filtering into the isolation chamber, he wasn't knocked out completely. Still, his arms were useless, lying at his side like giant anchors. Even his eyelids were too much of a burden to open. But he felt the workers studying him, and he heard them talking. He was a weapon, they'd said. He could make the trio stronger, help them earn their independence. He was something they needed to replicate.
"Well, be careful, then," a medic had snapped. "He's our only subject."
"No, he's not," another replied. "There's a girl, too. Burke confirmed it." Cohen's heart had plummeted. He'd feared this. Ever since speaking telepathically with the doctor, ever since realizing he wasn't quite human anymore, he'd worried he'd cursed Thea while resuscitating her. But the symptoms never arrived.
The lieutenant must be mistaken. Now, sitting in an empty cell with walls too strong for him to even dent, Cohen wished otherwise. He couldn't be alone again. Couldn't be the only one of his kind. He needed Thea to be like him. It was selfish, callous, and yet he still wished it with every fiber of his being. He'd saved her in the bunker, and she'd saved him in the dumbwaiter shaft, and now they needed to save each other from this prison. They had their differences, and he had much to make up for, but he knew with an irrefutable certainty that they'd only survive this if they worked together. He'd tried shutting himself off from the world, fighting alone. It didn't work. Sitting on the edge of his cot, he reached out to her. Thea?
It's Cohen.
Can you hear me?
Nothing.
He tried again.
Thea? Please, say something.
The silence closed in on him, crushing, drowning. He put his head in his hands, helplessness gnawed at his chest. And then he heard it, the thump of life. He paused, strained his hearing. There it was. Again. And again. A steady, familiar rhythm. It came not from the hallway, where he'd already listened for a guard, but from directly beside him. He turned toward the wall and put a palm to it. The surface was cold. A faint creak, someone settling onto a cot, and the material beneath his palm warmed. It was possible it was merely his own heat transferring into the wall, but the heartbeat was stronger in his ears now, and if he craned his senses, he could make out an exhale, too.
Thea?
He thought. The pulse on the other side of the wall kicked in his ears, momentarily faster, gleeful. And then, her voice in his head, the most beautiful four words he'd ever heard. I have a plan. This is Amy McFadden. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Contagion by Aaron Bowman, presented by HarperTeen and Harper Audio. This program was produced by B Audio Limited. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2018 by Aaron Bowman. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.